Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard, along with our company's founder, Tom Grandy. This program is entitled Communication, the Map to the Party. Tom, this presentation will be a real treat for our listeners. It's a recorded section of Dave Ramsey's multi-day Entree Leadership program. I had the opportunity to attend Dave's week-long Entree Leadership Master Series program and found the information to be incredibly invaluable in terms of how to run a successful business.
Bill, I remember you talking about the program and all the really great knowledge Dave imparted. This section on communications is no different. It's packed with practical suggestions on how to better communicate within the work environment. What really caught my attention was his sharing on what they call key results areas, which are, in reality, job descriptions, but with realistic, specific goals to be met. The reporting he outlined systematically reviews the goals and how they are or are not being met.
Oh, you're right, Tom. You know, as a result of this program, we actually created key results areas for each of our team members. It simply outlines what winning looks like for the team. I would highly recommend that our listeners take advantage of one of Dave's programs, if at all possible. Dave formed the Lampo Group in 1992 to counsel folks hurting from the results of financial stress. His first bestseller book was Financial Peace, based on all that he and his wife Sharon had learned. Dave and a friend of his started a local radio show called The Money Game, which now is nationally syndicated as The Dave Ramsey Show. The company history is full of landmarks, including 6 bestsellers on the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Publishers Weekly lists. The Lampo Group has evolved into Ramsey Solutions and now has more than 400 team members and a variety of products and services to help individuals, families, and companies reach their financial goals. Many companies define success based on the dollars coming in, but Ramsey Solutions defines its success by the number of lives they've changed. And now, with Communication, the Map to the Party, here's Dave Ramsey with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation.
One of the things we talk about a lot around this building is communication. Communication is the map to the party. Winning organizations have a culture of communication that is intentional and effective. High-quality organizations have high levels of communication. I didn't say big organizations. I said high-quality. They can be big. They can be small. It can be you. You got to be communicating with yourself. I don't care what it is. But in your organization, you've got to have high levels of organization and high levels of communication. So the bottom line is this. Most people don't do it. And I got to tell you how we started. We were so bad. The way we started was we just said, we got work to do. Everybody get your work done. And then we looked up and people had clubs hitting each other over the head. And shipping was mad at IT. And IT didn't like web. And web was mad at marketing. And you know, people trying to get business done were mad at all of them. And it was just like, you know, we realized we had to stop and spend T-I-M-E, which when you're spending that with payroll, it's called money. You're investing money in making sure that the right hand knows what the left hand is doing. When you're not communicating inside the place, then it just blows up in your face. And I gotta tell you, a lot of the drama that we have had, other than hiring crazy, has been associated with the right hand not knowing what the left hand is doing. And the harder we work at getting rid of that, the lower our drama is, the higher our productivity is, and the better experience our customer has, and the more profit we make. It's all tied together. It's linked together in a chain. High quality organizations have high levels of communication. Communication is the map to the party. When I was in college, I lived 26 miles off the campus of UT, down in the hill country of East Tennessee. To get there, you literally had directions like, when you see the country store, don't turn there. And this map looked like some kind of child, this was before Google, okay? Before any kind of, you know, we hand drew a map that we handed out when we were having a party, and it looked like a child treasure hunt map. It was unbelievable. It was the map to the party. But it kind of reminded me of that. You know, when everyone has a copy and the directions make sense, everyone shows up at the party and it's a blast. But you wouldn't believe the number of people that got lost down there in the country. And there were no cell phones, okay? This is back in the day. And they're just lost out in the hills of East Tennessee hearing banjo music, right? And freaking out and going, I can't even find my way out of this place, much less find it today, find to Dave's house. And you know, kind of that's the way it feels when your team is that way. Because the level of frustration that anyone feels when they don't know what's going on causes you to quit. No one is enthused by not knowing what's going on. No one's fired up by not being in the know, not being in the loop. Only the cool kids know what's going on. Or over the people, you know, that team over there, they just do their own thing like they don't even work with us. They don't even know we're here, you know. And you know, this sense of silos and this kind of stuff, man, we have fought it. I don't know about you guys, but I mean, it's a constant battle to keep everything cross-firing in the right hand and know what the left hand is doing. We work hard at this, and we still drop the ball. But one good thing is we've worked so hard at it for so long that everyone in the organization values when it happens well. And so that means that it's not like just me personally or me and three leaders trying to impugn communication on the company. Now we've beat it to death so much that it's become a value of the organization. It's part of the culture to where everyone says, we got to do what it takes to communicate. We got to do what it takes to communicate. Because life is better when we're communicated. The place is more fun to work at. I feel more fulfilled, more productive. I'm less frustrated. I value communication. The organization culture values it. And the good news is once you get everybody working on it, you can really start to accomplish a lot of communication at levels you can't do where it's just you trying to put in place policies from your chair by yourself to get people to do this stuff. And it takes a while to get the culture to appreciate it. But you got to be really intentional. You got to push this thing around, man. You know, some companies, they use mushroom communication with their team members. They leave them in the dark and feed them manure. And people feel like mushrooms, and they're just they react like it too, because sometimes companies are afraid. A lot of people function from a fear perspective. They fear their employees. They fear if they knew too much, how would they act? If they knew what was going on, really, what would their response be? And I'm just not going to live in fear. Fear's not a fruit of the spirit, and I'm not living there. And so we're just real open. We talk all the time. We don't have any big secrets. If we're working on something that's not for the public, we tell them. But sometimes it gets out, and we just take that chance. And we just don't have anything that we're like doing that we're ashamed for someone to know. And it just keeps things real clean and open and moving all the time. We work really, really hard at this. A culture of secrets and missed opportunities followed by fear develops when communication is low. When people don't know what's going on, they immediately deteriorate to fear. They assume the worst. When we went through a massive reorganization of our company last year and how we're structured, you know, I hesitated to use the word reorganization. Although that's technically what we were doing. We were organizing in a different way than we had been organized before. That's what reorganization means. But reorg or reorganization out there means a bunch of people getting laid off. That's what it means. Downsized. Retooled. Whatever terminology somebody wants to use for I'm getting rid of people. And so I had to say 26 times from this stage, as we use the word reorganization, don't let your corporate mentality from your former job where you got screwed enter your brain. That is not what we're doing. Reorganize means we're going to reset the table. All the forks and knives are staying. We're just going to put them at different plates. Okay? Chill. And people who had been here 5 years went, yeah, okay, Dave said it. That's what we're going to do. They believe me because I had credibility with them. People been here 4 months are going, oh, God, I just got here. I'm going to be last in, first out. Oh, you know. That's what's going on, right? You know that's what's in their head when you say reorg. Oh, it's code for boom, knife's coming out, machete, economy's down. We're going to reorg, chop, 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 right? That's what it means in the corporate world, doesn't it? When they're trying to make Q1, fastest way to get your stock price up, chop payroll, biggest line item on the P&L. Boom, stock price goes up. instantly. Why? Profits go up instantly, temporarily. Because you got rid of your best resource, humans. And eventually you'll pay for that in culture, and it'll show up in profits. And then you can't figure out why you can't succeed. And that's how corporate America thinks sometimes. Now, there's good corporate America, but when I say corporate America, it's a bad view of them, in other words. And so people can run a large business well. I know several that do, and with the right kind of cultures and so forth. So you cannot let things deteriorate into fear. And when people don't know what's going on because you've not been very intentional and lots of methods and processes and everything else to make sure that 21 times they heard the message, then they heard the message. Otherwise, they're going to be afraid. You got it in your head. You have no ill intent in your head. You know what's going on. But when somebody doesn't know, they immediately, they don't go hopeful, they go fear. Hope is not an immediate reaction to a lack of communication, except by people who are very naive and haven't lived very long, right? I mean, and that somebody will help them with that pretty soon. So fear, when you don't know what's going on, you better, you know, most people assume the worst. So let's look at some methods of communication. Let's start with key result areas. The best way to develop a job description, we call it a KRA. We mentioned that in the hiring and firing lesson, that everyone needs a KRA, a key results area. Now, we keep it very, very, very simple. It's very clean. There's not much to it. There's several examples of some of ours at the end of your chapter if you want to flip and look at them later. But it's just, it's like three, one, two, or three, usually three, Roman numerals. Roman numeral one, this is the general thing we want you to do with your job. Then Roman numeral two is this is secondary, and Roman numeral three is this is the third. And that's the order of priority. And you look at it, you understand it, we talk about it. In other words, this is how we define winning. A new team member with a new position, we often ask them to write their own KRA. Now, this is not someone joining. Okay, if I've got a sales team, I got 28 salespeople doing nothing but calling churches all day long, we don't need a new KRA for that if you become one of those people, a church advisor, we call them. If you're going to be one of those, that KRA is already written. You're going to accept the one that the other 28 people are on. But if it's a brand new position, we've never filled this position before, we've never done it before, we want you to kind of act like you know what you're going to be doing and write it all out and see how well we communicated in the interview process, in other words, of what we expect of you. What does winning look like? That's the answer, thing we're trying to answer. The KRA lists areas of which results are expected, measured, and reported. You do these things, this is what's expected, this is what's measured, and this is what's reported. Now, when that new team member writes out their own KRA, we don't just go with it. We sit down with them, and then we get to adjust it, and it's an opportunity for us to have a lot of clarity right as they start their job with us of exactly what winning looks like. You do this, you're a rock star. To the extent you don't do this, we all got problems. This is going to be more money, more praise, everything's good, more stability. Don't do this, we got problems. Lots and lots of clarity. Now listen, 90% of you in here do not have written job descriptions for your people. You've got to go home and do this immediately. You're killing them. They don't know what the flip you want them to do. You think you've told them, and when you sit down to write this, you're going to be going, God, they've been with me 5 years, and they still don't know what they're supposed to be doing. And you know whose fault that is? Yours. Yours. Every single person on the team, no matter what they do, has to have a written key results area job description. Every person. It's your biggest investment. Look at your P&L. Number one item on the P&L, always payroll. Human resources cost almost every company more than anything else costs. And in most companies, it costs you twice what everything else costs. It's not only the biggest, it's the biggest times two of anything else in there. For goodness sakes, make sure you're getting a clear return on that investment. Because I promise you, you're going to be amazed. You thought that Joe, he does such a good job. And when you sit down with Joe and you go, okay, Joe, let's write out these KRAs. I don't even know how to do it. I've never done it before. Let's sit down here and work on it just together. I learned this and I really want to try it. I think it makes sense. And he's going to be going, this is what I do. And you're going to be going, You've been here 7 years. No, this is what you do. He's going, no, this is what I do. And you're going to have this conversation. You're going to be going, oh my God, for 7 years. This guy's been, he's not 90 degrees off of where he's supposed to be, but he's a good 7 or 8 degrees off. And you're going, man, you know, no wonder we keep pulling, and he's pulling that way, and I'm pulling this way. No wonder we're not winning. It's going to blow you away. Nobody does this. And even the ones that do it don't do it well, usually. We have found this one thing changes our hiring process, changes our firing process, changes our communication process with team members. It's unbelievably powerful. And it's so basic. It's so rudimentary, so primary. There's really nothing to the idea. It's not like a lightning strike, but it's one of those simple things that when you do the implementation of the simple, it rocks your world. Do this. Do this when you get home. Do not have team members walking around without written KRAs that you both have agreed to and both sign that says, when you do this, these are the results that are expected. We're going to measure these results, and they're going to be reported, and then we're all going to be having problems or having cheers. One of the two. We're going to deal with the fact that the results were not hit. Or we're going to deal with the fact that they were hit. High fives all around. You get the opportunity to recognize people or reprimand people. And you get the opportunity to align people with what they're supposed to freaking be doing. It's so frustrating. I can't believe how long we went without this. And when we put it in place, man, it rocked this place. It was about 15 years ago, and there were only about 30 of us. But I got to tell you, with 30 people, when we sat down and did it, it changed the air in the building. Because people suddenly, they were fired up because they knew what, you know, that they want to please. They want to do what you want them to do. But I had done a lousy job of telling them what I wanted them to do. And when I told them what they wanted to do, they went, yeah, man, I'm going to go ring the bell. Ding, man, ring the bell. I'm doing it. The KRA answers the question, what does winning look like? What does winning look like? You're telling them, you do this, you're a rock star. You don't do this, you're a dog. You got a problem. Because what we were doing, I got to tell you, is we took everybody bowling and we turned off the lights. And there was a lot of noise, but we couldn't tell who was winning. And that's how the company felt. You know, it was nuts. It was like a party, but kind of a weird party, you know? Just nuts. So the second thing we do as a method of communication is we use the power of story. All entree leaders need to learn to tell the story. The story is the history of the team that led them to victory. And it gives them hope when they're facing obstacles. They weren't here when that happened. But they know that that's the price that was paid. They know that the way I sold the first Financial Peace books was out of the trunk of my car. And I'll sit in staff meeting, stand up here in staff meeting, and I will tell stories about people like Paul Boyd, who runs he's basically the CFO of our church channel, meaning he runs all the numbers and the metrics in the church channel for that whole operation, which is a huge operation. Paul Boyd worked here the first year. He had retired from, he went through Financial Peace University, changed his life. He came in crying, sitting down with me one day, how can I help? I've never been involved in anything that has impacted my life as much as it says, I got to help you with this. That was 17 years ago. And I said, I don't know. I mean, I said, I've got people over here in customer care. I said, you can sit in the phone room and answer calls. And he did. And he took his retirement from General Motors and lived on that. And the first year sitting in the phone room, he moved to be the manager of the phone room. Woo! You know what his income was the first year he worked here? Zero. He worked for me for an entire year and made nothing. Why? Because I'm a cheap guy? No, we didn't have any freaking money. And I told him when he gets some money coming in, he could have some of it. And they really didn't have any money coming in. It wasn't working. I'm like, dude, get in there and figure it out. We're all doing this together. And when you start making some money, you're going to make some money. Let me tell you this. You don't want to get between me and Paul Boyd. I'll take you down. You understand? This is how I communicate to my team. I tell them, like I was in London a while back and I happened to pick up one of these, the British Pound. And I tell my team, I said, some of you guys are in here, you've been in here 5 months, or you've been in here 4 years, or you've been in here 3 years, and we're winning, and we're a big deal in the marketplace that you're in, and you go to these radio conventions, and everybody wants to be Dave Ramsey, and you go to the church thing, and everybody wants to be Financial Peace University, and you go to this, and we're a big deal. Long before all that happened, there wasn't any big deals. There were people in here that cared, and they paid a price for you to get to be a big deal. And don't you ever forget it if you work on our team, because around the edge of this thing, it says, we are standing on the shoulders of giants. Does that preach? That'll work. That's storytelling. There's a price to be paid. And it's not to shame somebody that's here. It's to say, you know, don't you come in here and start throwing some textbook academic crap at me and tell me how so-and-so's not any good at what they do. I'll just take you out just for the convenience of it. Because Paul Boyd's not leaving. Right? And, you know, he's going to have to really mess up bad. You know what I'm saying? It's going to have to be unbelievably bad. And, you know, and Kelly Boyd, his wife's the same thing. She picks up the phone, calls Sharon. Sharon will do whatever she needs to do for Kelly. We're lifelong friends. You're standing on the shoulders of giants. That's the type of stories you tell. You tell how you got here. How you got here. I've got a good friend who's an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, and I'm just enthralled with the culture of the Jewish community when they are worshipful, and it is a religion that they practice. I love the culture as well, but the fact that men or women in biblical times, or even today in some cases, can recite their lineage of the tribe of Israel that they're in, all the way back. I mean, the New Testament opens up that way, the Begats, right? To show you the lineage of Christ for those of us that are Christians. But either way, just to say that I can stand and tell the story, and the Red Sea was parted, and Moses was not allowed to enter the Promised Land, and they can tell the story of their entire heritage. I've kind of gotten back. We're Scottish, and a lot of hillbillies are Scottish, because if you've ever been to Scotland, it looks a lot like East Tennessee. The hills look the same, the temperature's about the same, and they make whiskey. And so it's very similar to Scotland, right? And they don't like taxes, and they don't like anybody telling them what to do. I'm telling you, there's a real correlation between Appalachian people and Scottish people, Scotch-Irish. So we've traced it back, and we found the Ramsey Castle, right? The Dalhousie in Scotland. And it turns out that bunch were a bunch of fighters, and they fought with William Wallace sometimes, and then sometimes they fought against him. So they were pretty typical Scots. They couldn't make up their mind. And so very interesting people. But I haven't really tied it all the way. I got us all the way to the shore here in 1769, but I haven't been able to tie it directly to that castle yet, and I'm working real hard because I really want to be tied to that castle. So I may just make it up. But isn't it cool to know your lineage, to know your history? And when we were over there a couple summers ago with our family, we all, you know, the kids, the girls, and Daniel and their husbands, and taking pictures in front of Dalhousie, the Ramsey Castle, and, you know, we're claiming it, baby. I mean, it's ours, but, it's not now. They sold it. It's a bed and breakfast. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? So it's cool to tell the story, to have something you're tied to know. I know what my I've got my great-grandpa's draft card, my great-grandfather's draft card from World War I. And he was a little bitty turkey, meaner than snot, too, you know. Those hillbillies, man, they would cut you. And so, he's a trench fighter in World War I, just hand to hand, you know? Scary. To know that stuff makes me go, oh, that's kind of probably what's wrong with me. You know, I mean, you got to be able to tell the story. And when you can tell the story of your family, you tell the story of the organization, people need to know where you come from. How many of you are not first generation, you're second, third, fourth generation in your business, or you're getting close? Good gracious. Write that stuff up. Tell the story of what grandpa did, great grandpa did, when they were forming this thing. Those team members that are joining need to graft into that story and make it part of their lives. They need to be able to recognize this, because they forget. And let me tell you what comes with that, a sense of pride, a sense of dignity. Because people want to be a part of something that's bigger than them. We all do. One of the best I've ever seen at it was the pastor in the church I met God in, Pastor Hardwick. And he would sit down in a board meeting or sit down in a leadership meeting or sit down in a congregational meeting and tell the story of how the church started. When he was 18 years old, he started this church. The potbelly stove and five people. And he would name the five people. And you got to where you could name the five people. As a matter of fact, you got to where, after you were there a long time, you could actually do the whole story in his voice just to make fun of him. Because he just pounded and pounded it and pounded it. And then they moved from the corner of Rose and Sadler, which I had, you know, I grew up in Nashville, but I had to go look and see where Rose and Sadler was after a few years because I got tired of hearing about it. And it was a nothing, nothing, nothing down in the middle of nothing, you know? And then you go up three blocks and they moved over to Alberta Street. Now, why do I know this stuff? This was before I was born that this was happening. And they built a basement first. And then they sold donuts and cakes door to door. That little church did until they were able to build the top. See, I can tell the whole story right now. And I haven't even gone to that church in 12 years other than to visit. They're friends of ours. But that's the church I was in when I met God and when I was going up and I was part of that leadership team. And he told the story so often of how we got to here. Because the church, when I was going, there was 7,000 people. And you can walk into a place like that and go, oh, wow, this just happened. It didn't happen. They worked their tail off and God's blessed it for 30 years. And then suddenly there was an explosion. So tell the story. The story is the history of the team that led them to victory, and it gives you hope when you're facing new obstacles. I tell our team all the time, we are in businesses that nobody's supposed to be in, radio and publishing, two of the dumbest businesses on the planet. And we move the immovable. We do things that no one else in those businesses do. They're not able to do them. We specialize. One of our values, one of our core values is we move the immovable. We go into a business where everybody says it can't be done, and we beat the snot out of it for two decades until they all surrender. And we just keep beating on the wall until finally somebody comes along and says, Mr. Gorbachev, take that wall down. And then all of a sudden it comes down, like that one statement did it. No, they were beating on that wall for two decades before he got there. Then Reagan points and gets the credit. I mean, he was the final catalyst, yeah, so he gets some of the credit. No problem with that. But, you know, there was more, and it wasn't just him pointing at the wall. It wasn't that simple. And a lot of my team comes up with great ideas, but I completely came up with the Martha's Place idea. And it was genius. I went to Lexus, and I sat there, which I don't normally do, and to pick up my car, and it wasn't quite ready after a repair. And I went in, and I sat down in the waiting area, and there was fresh brewed coffee, smell all over the place, and hot cookies coming out of the little oven. Just a little bakey, little Otis Spunkmeyer oven about this big. It really wasn't much of an oven, right? And a little, it wasn't a big waiting area, but it's a little different than sitting in a grease-stained whatever, right? And then I'm like, yeah, your car will be ready in a minute, you know, but instead this is a class experience to pick up my car. I went, And then we were skiing, man, many, many years ago, and we finished skiing at the end of the day, spring skiing, and so it was kind of warm in Beaver Creek. And we came to the bottom of Beaver Creek, and at the bottom of Beaver Creek, there's a beautiful Hyatt or Hilton, I forget which it is, and they've got a fire pit that is as big around as from that pole to that pole, that big a circle, a little wall about like this, with a fire in the middle of it, and you sit on the edge of it or over in the or over on the wall or with your feet propped up, drink hot cider, cool off while the sun's coming out in the afternoon. It's beautiful and it's warm when you're spring skiing with the snow all around you in these mountains. And a guy walking around inside the fire pit with an old cowboy hat twisted up, knotted up, and kind of raggedy old jeans telling stories about the pioneers that had settled that area in those mountains. And so he's a storyteller while he's doing that. And I went, okay, Martha's going to be our storyteller. She's going to tell our stories to our fans who come in. And when you walk into our building, it's not going to feel like corporate America because you're going to smell fresh baked banana bread and fresh baked cookies and any coffee you want. It's all free. And we want you to come watch the show, hang out, meet Martha, hear our story, connect to us with the romance of story. And so I combined the Lexus experience and the storyteller, and she knows all of our stories. She wasn't here when they all happened, But she has taken time to go through and learn from some of those giants, some of the old stories and the things that Dave does, the things that Sharon does, the things that the kids do, because people want to know that stuff, the things that we do in the high school curriculum. She is on top of everything that's moving in this place and can connect anyone when they walk in the door with who they need to be. And that's their first experience, is the smell and this sweet lady who knows everything and will tell you a story. And before you know it, you've just joined our tribe. You can't help it. It's genius. It's just so smart. I love it. All right, the second thing then, or the next thing, is shared purpose as a method of communication. The team is not a team without shared dreams, vision, mission statement, goals. Does that sound familiar? You got to share the dream. We got to share the vision that develops out of that. We're going to share the mission statement. You have to memorize our mission statement in the first 90 days when you work here. And we used to, in the old days, make everybody stand up and say it. And then they got where it was so cheesy that they were making fun of me. And like three ladies got up here and did like a cheer with the mission statement to make fun of me. It was hilarious. And they're like, gotcha, Dave. And I'm like, okay, okay. But you still, you got to know. You got to be able to recite the mission statement in the first 90 days. Why? Because we're, you know, it's a Boy Scout creed. Because I don't remember what the Boy Scout creed says. I remember memorizing it. But this matters because you need to know what we do and what we don't do. Mission statement, you're out of bounds marker. And it reminds you that what we sell here, what's product we sell here? Hope. It's what we sell. All the time, in service, in our methodology, in our product lines. And so you've got to do what it takes to be able to get everyone on the same page. And then we have shared goals. We got to get the ball across the line. We have to have shared goals. Meetings. Entree leaders should schedule regular pep rallies that involve everyone. We do weekly meetings and devotionals for the whole team. This room is full on Monday mornings. And it is mandatory to attend staff meeting. You cannot schedule anything across it except an emergency doctor's appointment or a vacation, or if you're, you know, if there's a big thing you're on the road for, like John Acuff missed yesterday. He was in L.A. doing book tour. We're okay with that. We didn't do a staff meeting yesterday. We have a big deal going on called Entree Master Series. But Monday mornings, you're in here, period. Because that's a method of communication. Each of the P&L areas stands up and gives a report of something that's going on. Sometimes it gets a little boring. We're working on that. We want people to use more video and more audio and more pictures of things that have happened. They need to see a picture of this when we report on the fact that you guys were here. And we talk about what a good group you were and how fun you were. And how that's the first time we've ever done that tour thing we did last night. That freaking worked, you know? And so we'll talk about that. And had a great spirit on it, enjoyed interacting with you. Our team enjoyed interacting with you. I've already heard reports back. Got emails this morning going, ding, ding, rung the bell, Daniel. Tardy, good job. And, you know, that kind of stuff. So all of that's communicated. So the right hand knows what the left hand's doing. By the way, if that worked for this kind of a thing, maybe that kind of thing might work for something else we're doing that's a big deal. So they need to know what worked. Oh, that sucked. It didn't work. If, you know, crickets, right? So we need to kind of talk about that. So we tell things that flop too. It's family time. So each of the P&L leaders will stand up and go, hey, we went to this bankruptcy conference. We tried this marketing thing. It was a disaster. It was awful. We tried this marketing thing. It was awesome. Well, best thing we've ever done. Because then the high school curriculum guys are thinking, hey, we're going to an education conference next week. Maybe we could steal a page out of that playbook and get some best practices. Plus, we know the bankruptcy guys just got to win, and we can you know, do that. By the way, bankruptcy guys are this. We have one of the approved courses by the U.S. trustee. To get out of bankruptcy, you have to take an education class on money. And we're one of the approved courses, so that's what that is. We're not teaching people to file bankruptcy. I need to clarify that. So, but you know, whoever it is that's standing up, high school curriculum guys and gals, whether it's, you know, Entree leadership team, whether it's a live events report on something that was happening, or Financial Peace University Church, or Core Wellness into the corporate America, all those different things, they're constantly telling everybody what's going on. The marketing team stands up, the web team, the leaders stand up, go, these are the projects we're working on, and nobody knows what they said, and they sit back down, and you know, you know, but we have fun with it, and everybody's on there. And this is when we do recognition, and this is when we do all kinds of things. So it's a pep rally, but it's family time, and it, you know, and I'll allocate 15 or 20 or 30 minutes ever so often, not every meeting, but just to take a core value and go, this is who we are. This is why we do this. And I teach just like I'm teaching you, because I can't just assume they all read Entree Leadership. That'd be a bad plan. It'd be a really bad plan for people in that building to not know this material. And so ever so often, I also teach through one of these lessons. So they all know what's going on. Do these weekly meetings. We do a devotional on Wednesdays. In here, we have an outside speaker come in, typically a local pastor, sometimes a big name. you know, is in town. It's a friend of mine, and we've had some unbelievable speakers in here. Michael W. Smith, some of the music people around here, or, I don't know, Max Licato was a buddy of mine, those kinds of people. And they're in town working on book stuff or whatever. We'll schedule them in here to do a devotional. And, man, it's pretty amazing. We've had some world-class people on this stage. Wednesday morning is a highlight in this place. Everybody wants to come. But it's an hour. So we're on the same page because that's our value system in this place. And so you lay those things out. Scheduled meetings are needed with your teams, team segments, and individual team members. I have a scheduled meeting individually with each board member every 2 weeks. There's eight of them. Individually, I have an hour. Now, each of those board members also has, if they're a C-suiter, they have, meaning a CMO, our chief marketing officer, as an example, Jen Sievertson, who's brilliant. And so one of her executive directors or directors of some of her areas within marketing, you know, social media will come in. Steve Naismith, some of y'all meet him, met him last night, those kinds of folks, you know, they'll come in. But each of their lieutenants or their generals will come in with them, and you know, we'll all sit and, okay, updating me and making and getting approval on things. We brainstorm on things, and we got an hour set in the calendar. It's a static meeting, very predictable. And they count on that time to be able to connect with me. And they do the same thing with their teams. Now, we don't meet to death, but we do. We're very intentional about creating communication and causing it to happen. And static meetings that are set, it's predictable. Every Monday morning, you got to be here. It's predictable. For years when I had the three guys, Monday morning was staff meeting, Tuesday morning was Bill Hampton, Wednesday morning was Matt Woodburn, Thursday morning was Louis Falzetti. It was that way for 12 years. Every week, had an hour with each of them. And they're the three VPs that were running the three divisions in those days of the company. Now the company is organized differently. These should be static because the crisis of the day will keep vital communication from happening. Somebody comes up with something they need to work on that's not A1 steak sauce, you'll bump that meeting. I got to tell you, it's got to be really important for me to bump a meeting, one of those leader meetings, because they count on those meetings for workflow and communication. And if I start bumping those meetings, we get backed up, we get bottlenecked. And so it's very, very, very important. Not that I approve everything, but the one thing we have discovered about me is I'm not a micromanager, but I do not like surprises. I just need to be in the loop. Because when I don't know stuff, I become really uncomfortable. And that's not good for me or anybody else. So I just know, we know that about me, and I'm okay with that. I'm really not needing to approve everything. It's really not that emotion, but I at least want to know it exists. Because sometimes I actually can give you one little thing that tweaks something and it changes the whole feel of it. I have been doing marketing a while. I am, you know, there's a reason that I'm running this thing. And so I might actually have something intelligent to say too, but it's more of a help than a control. And so it's drive by and you go, what? You know, I sat down in a meeting the other day, we were approving a webcast that we're doing, and I was sitting there with a group of people, and we were watching the video, there's about 10 of us in there, and we got done, and they all looked at each other, and then they looked at me, and they were all shaking their head. And they're going, we gotta work on this. I went, okay, you do. I didn't have to say a thing. There was some stuff had to be changed. I mean, when you ran it and looked at it, it just wasn't ready. And there were some changes that had to be made. And then they sent it to me this morning, and it really, really looks good. They immediately, but it was kind of weird that, you know, individually they had all looked at it and were okay. But when we all sat there and watched the thing on the wall, it was like obvious, right? And it was changed the spirit somehow of the communication process. And we all just kind of went, mm-hmm. And that's about all I said, you know, that was it. But I got it this morning, watched it early, about 6 o'clock this morning. It's awesome. They did a great job with it. Scheduled meeting also keeps down the urge to bring up one thing at a time 100 different times during the week. You will get ankle biters that will just eat your leg off. You know what I'm talking about? Just they one thing you to death. And I finally just go to your room, make a list. Go to your room, make a list. Go to your room, make a list. And then bring your list once a week. Now, if it's an emergency, come see me. I'm okay with that. But, you know, these people, they just drop by and they're just, you know, it's just like fluid. Everything's dynamic all the time. Drive you nuts, man. You put about 20 of those in your life, you get nothing done except your head's spinning on an axis. And so, you know, just go to your room, make a list. Go to your room. So when they come in, they have a list of things they want to get to. And I really can't be late for those meetings. When I am, it's damaging because they have an hour and 10 minutes worth of stuff to do in that hour. It's full. The wise entree leader requires weekly reports that outline what was done this week toward the KRA, and these should be turned in at a set time. Now, this has evolved over the years. We used to kill trees. Now, this is weekly reports from, I wonder if there's a date on one of these. 06. Probably last time we did them this way. So this is the, what, 13? So 7 years old. That's what our weekly reports used to look like 7 years ago. And what that was each person did a weekly report. And they turned it in every Friday. Now, the idea is this. The incremental measurement when you're doing a weekly report motivates the team member because there's accountability to the KRA. Because what I ask people to do, you could create the format, whatever format of you wanted with your weekly report in the old days. That's how we did it. Now, there's a couple things I'll give you to change on that for future. But I just said anything you want to put on here is fine. There's only a couple things I want. One is I want what you're paid across the top of the report, and the second line is why I should be glad you're here. You're earning your keep? You feel like you're earning your keep? Yeah. In other words, this is my KRA. You pay me this, and I'm doing this to meet my KRA. And it was a good week. And it's not because you have to report to me, because when you write that down, you're reporting to yourself that you have value. It gives you great dignity and great power in the process. And people are lifted up by doing this. The second thing I want you to put on here is I want you to put a high and a low. Something good that happened this week, something bad that happened this week. Something that's good and positive and cheerleading, and something that's just frustrating the crud out of you. And I want you to put that in here. Now, I will go forward and tell you that at the point that it got this big, it was a problem to read this many every week and read them in detail for me to go through them. And like if you got 28 people in sales doing the same kind of sales, we eventually put them on a form. So at least you don't have to go through 28 different formats to get the same piece of information. And so their form, but their form also included what they made while they were here, their high and their low for the week. So at least they had a template. So that template started looking something like that. But the funny thing was these things Patty used to collect them. They had to be turned into Patty by 3 o'clock on Friday so that I could take them, throw them in a briefcase for wherever I was going over the weekend, home or traveling or whatever, and I read them on the planes, what I'd usually do, heading somewhere, right? And I'd read through them, make some emails, and then when I land, all the emails, the reaction to these, whatever need to be worked on, would be sent out to leadership or to the individual and that kind of thing. And that's how we did it for a long time. I will never forget, we've got a guy named one of our top sales guys. He's incredible. Bruce, he's kind of a hunter, fisherman type guy, outdoors guy. And so he and another guy did not, you know, we're always giving him a hard time about not getting the reports in by 3 o'clock, because Patty then had to organize them by the end of the day and get them all put in there and check off who's done a report and who hadn't on there, because we wanted to see that they were really done. So as you saw last night, the radio show is on the glass there in the lobby. 3 o'clock, all the reports are supposed to be in. So you kind of see people walking by towards Patty's office, doing there, dropping them off. Again, 7 years ago. But I look up and Bruce Coleman is, it's 3:45, so he's 45 minutes late with his report. He has his report in his teeth, and he's on the ground crawling, trying to get past the radio show without being seen, belly crawling through the lobby. And I'm like, oh, brother. So you just never know when you're going to get around here. But nowadays we don't kill trees anymore. We just turn them in. They're registered on a PDF, and then they're gathered. We've got an automated system, and they come to me every week automatically that way. I don't read them anymore, except I'll spot check ever so often randomly. But each of the leaders in your area have to read them, and each of the VPs or EVPs have to read their area, and they immediately need to act and react because they know I am going to spot check. Because, you know, it's hilarious. Let me tell you what weird happened, unintended consequence. I told you they have to put a low or a high. Now, I don't know what you thought when I said that. I know what I thought. I thought it had something to do with the fact that they worked here in business. No, these people put everything in the world in here. I mean, it's unbelievable. Now, there's sometimes some nice things. Low point of the week, my computer is being a jerk this week. High point, I've been managing my stress very well. I attribute that to letting me attend Dale Carnegie. Thanks, guys. Not bad. But I get stuff in here like, I broke up with my boyfriend, my low of the week. I thought he was the one. My dog died. We had to put the dog to sleep. I thought he was the one. It's I mean, it's unbelievable. And, you know, I used to kind of go, my wife is coming for a visit this weekend. Obviously, a guy we had moved in from out of town. I'm finally completely out of my old place, and my son turned 7 on the 15th. This is his highs for the week. And I went, did you work? Because that's kind of what I wanted his high to be about, you know, like something like I got my job done or, you know. And I started to go, you people really didn't get this. This is about, you know, business, hello, that kind of stuff. So, I'm trying to find another one I can read that isn't, there's just so many of them. One of them was low point, learning David has 2 hernias instead of just 1. It's her husband. I don't need to know this. Just, you know, the fact that he needs surgery is probably all we need to know, you know? I don't want to know this. Because I got a young team, and they're like, everything, they just drop in here. And I almost went up on stage and went, hello. I don't give a rip about that. Put something in here about the office. How's things going at work, you know? But then I realized it's a valuable leadership tool. Because if you're a single lady and you've had a dog for 8 years and you had to put the dog to sleep, I mean, we were talking yesterday about family pets, you know? That is a big deal. I don't make fun of that. It does break your heart. And so all I got to do is just walk by and say, hey, whoever, I'm sorry about, you know, sorry about your pet. It's always heartbreaking when you have to do that. Took me, 5 seconds as I walked by. Just a touch on the shoulder, just acknowledgement of pain, and keep moving. I didn't have to have a counseling session, didn't have to have a long meeting. Just care about people a little bit. And sorry about David's extra hernia. What? I don't know how you phrase that one, but anyway. Wild. So, but you get valuable information when you learn what's going on in people's lives, whether it's at business or whether it's not, and you get the opportunity to deal with things. The written accountability is as much for the writer of the report as the reader, because it holds you accountable to what you said you were going to do when you signed the KRA, and in some cases when you wrote the KRA. However, reports must be read and reacted to, or they become paperwork. You remember the story I told you in the other session when I talked about the young pregnant lady and the older lady who snapped at her and how they were out? Where we found that was in the reports. I read the low of the report is, I don't like it when people snap at me. You remember that? And I kind of went to myself, so get over it. And then I thought, no, what she's really saying is, I need some help. Would somebody in leadership help me resolve a disagreement because I'm paralyzed by this? That's really what she was saying. And I emailed one of my EVPs, and he said, I already handled it. You read the report. This is Tuesday. I read the report Friday. When were you reading them? And made fun of me back. But here's what's interesting, what I didn't tell you. She said after that, and she got reprimanded for this because it pissed me off. I don't like it when people talk down to me, but I don't guess it matters. Nobody reads these reports anyway. And we do read them every week. So it's like, you know, right? But isn't that interesting? Because that if people feel that way, even if it's not true, that becomes their reality. Well, she has no disillusionment anymore about us reading the reports. She knows we read them. Not only did we resolve her situation, we helped her understand that we do read them. So a little belligerence built into this. Okay, third trimester. It's okay. Cut her some slack, right? But anyway. That's the idea. You follow me? And so you gotta think through this. It just becomes paperwork. And so even though I don't read them today, one thing I do is I make sure my team reads them, my leaders read them. And I will spot check them. Tell me something you're finding in your reports. As a matter of fact, one of the things they do is I ask them for a cliff note, and each of my VPs sends me once a week a high and a low that they got out of their report that they're acting on. So-and-so said this in sales. So-and-so said this in admin in my area. And I get 3 or 4 little samples of things they picked up as they were reading the reports, which kind of lets me know some things are going on inside the company, but most importantly, it lets me know that VP's reading their reports and they're reacting to them, because otherwise it's just paperwork. Doesn't take long for them to do that. Doesn't take me long for me to read that. And I don't even respond to those emails. I read them, hit delete. It takes me 10 seconds per VP to look over them, and I got a little glimpse of something that's happening. Hey, I had my high of the week, best week ever in sales, right? So I can see that guy walking around. Hey, man, I heard you had your best week in sales. Way to go. Keep going. Like, I know everything. They think I'm omnipotent, right? Because I catch these little things, and they're like, he knows when the dog dies. He knows when I had a good sale. You know, it's like everything, because it's all coming back through, but it's spot things. And all you got to do is have a few of those ever so often, and it really helps you keep your finger on the pulse of the whole organization, even a big organization. So you're really watching what's going on. You're not just watching numbers, which is good. I watch metrics all the time. I love watching numbers. I can tell a lot what's going on from numbers, but don't let it become paperwork. Leave the report structure as open as possible. Let everyone do their own style as long as the information is passed. Again, when you've got several people doing the same job, you're probably going to want to template that. Scheduling a set meeting ensures that at least once a year further ensures the entree leader reviews every team member's income and gives them yet another time to present problems or ideas about the future. We did not do annual reviews when we started, because to us that sounded like corporate America and we didn't want to do that. And then we figured out we were screwing up, because we had one lady that came in and sat down and quit. And I said, why are you quitting? Because you're awesome and we love you here. We don't want you to leave. I haven't had a raise in 3 years. I'm like, how do we not give you a raise for 3 years? Well, I don't know. But she didn't come in barking about it, but she was mad about it. Well, rightly so. Somebody should have sat down and told her with money that she was doing a good job, because other people around her were getting raises because they were barking about it. And so you had to be the squeaky wheel? Well, that's a bad idea. So we don't want to do a corporate, plastic, cheesy annual review thing, but we do have it on the calendar once a year to sit down with the person, even if it's very briefly, just to remind us to look at their income and make sure it's in line, and look to decide if we're going to give them an annual raise of some kind. People don't get annual raises just because we don't do cost of living, that kind of stuff, but we do say the longer you've been here, the more you ought to make. You know, because you ought to be growing. And if you're not growing, you don't get to stay. So, you know, it's not like seniority. You just camp out long enough, you make more money, and you're not even better. We don't do that. When in doubt, the entree leader overshares. One thing about communication you need to remember is transparency. In a winning culture of communication, the team is they understand when in doubt, ask. Our last step of our onboarding process at the end of the 90 days, when you've finished all your onboarding thing and your 90-day probation is up, we have a thing in my boardroom with 12 people at a time. I do them usually about once a month these days because we're hiring at about that rate. And when I come off the show at 4, I do ads till 4:30 that I'm taping stuff. And then at 4:30, I go in. And from 4:30 to 6:30, we have a thing with the new team members that just finished their 90 days called Wrap with Dave. We bring in Chick-fil-A wraps, and we just sit and eat. And they tell their stories about how they got on board and what weird thing happened and how many times they were interviewed and how ridiculous it was and all that stuff. And then I tell stories about the old days and answer questions and cover some core values with them. And it's kind of that final thing. But one of the things I lay in there is, hey, you're going to hear stuff about me. And some of it's true. And you're going to hear stuff about this place. And some of it's true and some of it's not. And there's only one way to find out. Just walk in here and ask. You got a question about something that's going on? Hit your butt through that door. Or go see somebody, one of the leaders anywhere in the organization. But, you know, don't be walking around thinking something that might not even be true just because you didn't have the courage to ask. And that's one of the ways I wrap up at their onboarding process is remind them, when in doubt, ask. When it comes to sharing uncomfortable stuff with your team, when in doubt, overshare. You're not dealing with kindergartners, you're dealing with adults. You may have to remind them of that. When oversharing about problems, never publicly harm or embarrass anyone. Sometimes we've had key figures in the organization that left for whatever reason. Personal misbehavior, underperformance, they quit and went on to something else as they wanted to, but they're high enough profile that we need to explain that so-and-so's gone. Now, I'm not going to say, you know, he had a torrid affair for 6 weeks with somebody he met on Facebook. I'm not going to say that. Okay, that might have been what happened, but I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to embarrass the person. That's not what we do. But we just say, you know, we've got certain standards we live by around here, and guys, I'm real serious about that, and, you know, everybody's got to do that. And so we love so-and-so, and we wish them luck because we really do love them, and we really do wish them blessings on them, but they're not here anymore. And, you know, we're just going to talk about that like adults in here, and you're not going to talk about it amongst yourselves because it's none of your business. But I don't want them to just disappear. And then you think that they actually, you know, were the kingpin of a drug ring because you didn't hear what actually happened, which was almost nothing compared to that, you know. And so I'm not going to give you details because none of your business, but it's fairly small. It's not that big a thing. And you know, this is what's up. And we just overshare. And you keep that to yourself. And you don't be gossiping in the community about that. And you certainly don't be gossiping inside this building about that. And we just talk about it. It's uncomfortable. And I say it's uncomfortable when I'm standing up here. You know, the kids, the teenagers had a thing when the girls were in high school or college or whatever. They did a thing, awkward turtle, right? You know, the turtle that's on its back, he's awkward. And so that, you know, awkward turtle moment. This is going to be a weird moment. It's going to feel strange because people don't do this kind of thing. Well, we do. We over-communicate. When in doubt, we tell you what's up. The culture of communication shines the light on problems and how they're handled. This light shining, again, is done in such a way that individuals aren't harmed or embarrassed. When negative things are covered up and all the team gets is hype, there's a feeling of sanctioned incompetence. If all you do is talk about how great it is, all you do is talk about how wonderful everything is, and you never talk about when things are bad, nobody believes that everything's wonderful anymore. You can get into hype things, and where it's all a dream, it's all the positive, and you never talk about the other stuff. That can get you in trouble because you know you don't have any credibility anymore because everybody knows crap's going on. And if you just say, hey, crap's going on, this is garbage, I'm having to deal with this, and this is what's up with this, and we're dealing with this radio station, and this woman that's running this radio station hates Christians, and she's got it in for us, and she's going to take us out. We're probably going to lose this city just because it's a personal vendetta. So you guys pray that she gets fired. This is warfare. I'll bring it. That's it, man. You going to take me down just because of my faith? You know, we're tolerant of everybody but Christians, right? So, hey, man, I'll come after you. My Jesus isn't a wimp. So that's how we talk around here. And you get uncomfortable with that, you're not going to like being here. You know, that's okay. Leave. Because this is not going to change. That, you know, and we just bring that kind of thing into staff meeting. And we're apt to say things exactly like that. So we don't cover up when things are bad. But when things are great, other things are great. We talk about it. And then it has credibility. But if all you do is hype and flatter, and you only bring the good stuff, then everybody knows the other stuff's going on. Then nobody wants to go to those meetings. The greatest problem in communication is the illusion that it has been accomplished. Conclusion, the best quality communication is in person. Institute it with management by walking around. Prior to Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, being out, in 1982, there was a book out called In Search of Excellence by Tom Peters. He later wrote a book called Thriving on Chaos. And it, much like Good to Great, what Jim Collins did and what he's done in subsequent books as well, and previous books, Built to Last was his first one, big one, is they went in, they studied companies that were winning, and he looked for the attributes of the winning companies. And that's how Good to Great was built. In Search of Excellence was the same thing. They went in and searched excellent companies and found the attributes of those. One of the attributes I read in that book in 1982 was management by walking around. That great companies have personal contact. And I learned that then, and I've done it ever since. All that matters is this. All it is this. Ever so often, I will pick up my cell phone, walk past Patty's desk when I don't have an appointment scheduled at that moment, and I'll say, hey, I'm going to walk through the building and spread hate and dissension. I'll be back. And I just walk through the building, and I walk over here and walk through these other offices over here. And I walk in here, and I look at what's happening in this room, and I walk in the TV studio, and I get a sense of how production's going. And I just walk around, I stop and talk to people. Not big, long conversations, just check on folks. Just touch things, feel things. You can get a feel in the air of what's going on with your company, with your organization. And you'll see little things. I carry a notepad sometimes with me, and I'll go clean up that freaking mess in that stairwell. You know, and I'll just, you know, stuff like that. Because I'm just going through, and I'm just not, because those things are not big deals, but they're symptoms of people's brains. And I want their brains tuned in a different way. So I'm just touching that. I'm looking at this piece of, you know, I walked by one day and there's two pieces of printing laying there next to each other that were supposed to ship together and the colors weren't the same. And they're getting ready to ship them. And the PMS colors are off. What are you doing? Hey, come here. Look at this. And you know, we had this whole vendor lesson right there. And so you just walk through, it doesn't take long. Like 20, 30 minutes, I can walk through to 100,000 square feet and I can get the idea of what's going on, touch a couple people, say, hey, I'm sorry about, you know, sorry about what's going on with your mom. I heard she's sick. Sorry about this. And hey, man, I heard about your great sales. Good luck with that. That's killer. You're killing it. Record month in this area. Some whole area. You know, they hit the biggest month in the history of the company. I may just walk into one whole side of that building you all are in, and they're all in there working, you know, like crazy. I may just walk in there and go, yeah, baby, you killed it. And I'll hear one of them go, oh, that's just Dave. He does that sometimes. And so they're on the phone, right? Because he went over the phone. And, you know, hey, but hey, they did, man. They busted it. You know, 20 years we've been doing this. They just had the biggest month in the history of the whole stinking thing. Somebody ought to say something. And that took 5 seconds. And fun thing is I stick around here what they say for a second, then I head on out. Just leave it. Just leave that. Let that drop down into the room, right? But all you, this management by walking around, just feel it. You catch things. You correct course things, little things. You get, but more than anything, you get a sense. You can feel it in the air. You smell it, what's going on. But if you stay in your office all the time, you don't get that. Because you got work to do. You got plenty of work to do to stay in your office. But I think the work I'm supposed to be doing is leading. I can't do that only from my office or meetings or staff meetings where I'm in charge. I just kind of got to walk through sometimes and feel it. Group prayer is vital, in our case especially, because we're sharing not only a spiritual experience, we're also communicating with the only one who could solve these problems anyway, God. Where two or three are gathered in my name, I'm in the midst of them. Communication, even when conflict is involved, is the lifeblood of the organization. Managed by walking around. Communication should be done early and often. Communication should never publicly humiliate anyone. And communication is the entree leader casting the vision in such a way that the team knows how to get there and what their part is. We have a shared experience, a shared expectation. This is a big deal.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy and Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy and Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.